From Milwaukee's NPR, this is Capital Notes. We break down the big political news affecting Wisconsin. I'm Mayan Silver, speaking with J.R. Ross. He's editor of WisPolitics.com. He'll provide a roundup of the Wisconsin developments you need to know. Here's our latest conversation. Hi, J.R., good to talk to you.
No, thanks for having me.
So we'll start off with a way that politics is currently intersecting with people's health. It's PFAS, the forever chemical, is contaminating the groundwater in several Wisconsin communities, including Peshtigo, Wausau, and Green Bay. Last summer, the legislature approved millions of dollars to go towards cleanup, but so far, they've refused to distribute the money. What's happening here, JR?
Basically, Democratic Governor Tony Evers and Republican lawmakers can't agree on some provisions of the bill and the plan. And so this is a great example of what has become more frequent in the state capitol, where Republican lawmakers put money in the state budget to cover the cost of something, but they put the language to spend the money in a trailer bill. The reason they do that is governors have the authority in Wisconsin to use their partial veto authority if it's an appropriation bill. That means it spends money. If you put the spending in the bill with the language of how you want it spent, the governor can rewrite that language. They don't want that to happen. They want to control somewhat how this thing comes out. And they can't agree on what it should look like. I'll give you one example. One of the rubs is, or they call them, Republicans do, innocent landowners. Their argument is that these are people who did not create the PFAS pollution, didn't put it there. But if under what they want to do, they would be protected. You couldn't force them to pay for the cleanup because it wasn't their fault. The governor and his folks have argued that, wait a second, the way you're writing this, we think could protect polluters, people who may be more involved in what happened than they let on, for example. They don't like that. And so the governor vetoed the bill because of that and his argument that undercuts the authority of the Department of Natural Resources to regulate stuff. They just can't get on the same page. I mean, one, you know, you're talking Republicans and Democrats, they have different views of things. But two, this Republican legislature and this Democratic governor have not seen eye to eye on a lot of things the last 5 years. Here's another example of where they both want to do something, they can't agree on how to do it.
Well, with something as impactful as this, when we're talking about chemicals that are contaminating groundwater, affecting people's health, what do you see as the bridge here to get something done?
Excellent question, because here we are mid-April. That budget was signed July of last year. They still can't agree at this point how to do it. Now, one of the things with PFAS is everybody knows that they're bad, right? Like, these are not good things. But there's a lack of urgency in, for some lawmakers and folks, unless you have it in your backyard. I mean, this is a much bigger deal in a Peshtigo and a Wausau, La Crosse, I believe, in Madison, than it is other places that haven't dealt with this issue. So there isn't necessarily the same urgency. And two, again, they can't agree on how to get this thing done. And I don't know what the impact, how you're going to break the impasse. One thing I've been reminded of is a couple of years ago, both the governor and Republican lawmakers wanted to do with a personal property tax. It's a property tax paid on equipment that businesses have. They both agreed they wanted to do it. They put money aside in the budget to pay local governments the backfill, we call it, the lost revenue from that property tax going away. They couldn't agree in the final language. It took them until the next budget, 2 years later, to bring that money back around again and figure out the language of how to get rid of that tax to do it. It might be a repeat what we're going to see here with PFAS, where it might take until next session for them to figure out how to get this thing done, because the legislature's adjourned. They're not coming back. We don't expect them to, at least. And the governor keeps saying, release the money, because the money is at the Joint Finance Committee, the Budget Committee. They have the power to release it. The governor keeps saying, release the money so I can go spend it. Republicans keep going, not unless we have a plan that we agree on, because we don't trust you to spend it without some guardrails. I don't see how they get out of that right now unless there's some big breakthrough in the coming months.
All right. Well, moving from voters concerned about groundwater to voters and politicians concerned with how to vote, there are oral arguments on the attempt to bring back more absentee ballot drop boxes in the state Supreme Court next month. The case is in front of the state Supreme Court next month. Democratic Governor Tony Evers has intervened. What's this all about?
So essentially, the state Supreme Court in 2022, when there was a conservative majority, said state law in Wisconsin is not supposed to authorize drop boxes. It was essentially silent about it. There was nothing that said you couldn't use them, but nothing said you could. The court ruled because of that, that there is, you can't use a drop box in Wisconsin for an absentee ballot. You have to return it to the clerk via the mail or in person. Now, there's other issues for people who have disabilities that was hammered out in a federal court case, but let's focus just on the drop boxes piece. So that case was 2022. 2023, Janet Protasiewicz wins a spot in the state Supreme Court. Flips majority from 4-3 conservative to 4-3 liberal. Now there's a new lawsuit basically seeking to reverse that 2022 decision to allow drop boxes again. Why is it coming up? Because we have a presidential race coming up in Wisconsin in November. We are going to be one of the 4, 5, 6 states that decide the presidency. And there are people who are going, look, the Elections Commission is hopelessly deadlocked most time at 3-3 on various election laws. Our best path as a court is to try and get some stuff done, especially with the liberal majority. If you're a Democrat, they see a friendlier hearing, a friendlier group of people to hear their arguments than they might have had at the old majority. Here we are back with this similar case, similar issue. Can use a drop box in Wisconsin. It's telegraphed, obviously, that because the court took this case, that there are at least some liberals in the court that want to reverse that 2022 decision. That shouldn't be a shock to anybody. If unless you're open to it, you wouldn't take the case in the first place, right? So it's one of several we're watching right now that could dictate election law policy in Wisconsin this fall, and one of a number of lawsuits that deal with absentee balloting. For example, new lawsuit filed last week dealing with those who are disabled, arguing that there should be a way for them to cast an absentee ballot electronically. Wisconsin used to allow that for people pre-2011. Republicans took control of the legislature and the governor's office, restricted that just to overseas, permanent overseas voters and military voters. There was a challenge to that restriction in general. Went through the federal courts, wasn't successful. Now they're back focusing on the narrow question of should you allow those with disabilities to vote absentee electronically, via email essentially. The argument is if you don't allow this, then you have people who have disabilities who their right to privacy is compromised. When you go in the ballot booth, right, most people cast your ballot, nobody's looking over your shoulder. The argument is that people with disabilities, some of them, can't cast that ballot on their own if they have to, you know, do it in person. Electronically, though, they could do it, and that would protect that right to privacy.
Well, NPR has reported about how voting online is actually very, very risky. I mean, there's a small amount of people that are able to do it in the United States. Election expert said that putting a server online to support online ballot return is like asking a kid to go play in traffic. It just isn't safe.
Wait, that was bad advice from my parents when I was a kid? What are you talking about? You're absolutely, it's a very fair point. I mean, but this is sort of the challenge that certain people face in casting ballots. How do you address, right, their concerns? It's an interesting issue for the courts and one that could shape how this race is run or administered this fall.
Well, back to the drop boxes, in 2020, I'll just talk about the city of Milwaukee. There were 15 locations in the city with actual 24-hour drop boxes, and that was the height of the pandemic. You know, obviously, we're in a different place right now. It's 2024. The pandemic has receded. What kind of role do you think drop boxes could play, even if they do come back?
Not as prominent as one as 2020. I mean, we've seen the trend line from the pandemic to now where people are voting absentee less. They're going back more to quote-unquote their normal method of voting. Now, it's still elevated. People have found out that, hey, I kind of like this convenience of voting absentee. It's kind of nice. But for the most part, it's not what was going to be like in 2020. I think it was, 2 million votes were cast absentee in 2020 out of 3.3 million cast. We're likely not going to see that again in Wisconsin this fall. But again, I've covered presidential races since 2000 in Wisconsin. Other than having Barack Obama on the ballot, not a single one's been decided by more than 23,000 votes. Like every single ballot counts in Wisconsin. That's not even exaggeration at all. So how they're cast, if they're cast properly, what the courts say, they're all going to play roles this fall and possibly deciding who the president is.
And of course, at least 29 other states are currently allowing for absentee ballot drop boxes in locations other than election offices. So this isn't like an unheard of thing. It's why was there the partisan resistance? I mean, I know that President Trump was making false claims that drop boxes contributed to voter fraud, but is that basically what it's all about?
Well, for Republicans, they put a kind of a policy statement in state law some years ago that said voting absentee is a privilege. Because it is a privilege, it deserves to adhere to strict standards to ensure there's no fraud. And this, the worry is among a lot of Republicans is that absentee ballot is more prone to being vulnerable to fraud than voting in person is. So they worry that when you don't have a strict standard that things could go awry. That's not just because of Trump. It's kind of been there before, but Trump has elevated that argument, and he seized upon what happened in 2020 to try and claim that the election was stolen from him in Wisconsin. We know from the review by the nonpartisan Legislative Audit Bureau, we know from the review done by the Conservative Wisconsin for Law and Liberty, there is no evidence of widespread fraud in Wisconsin in 2020, but Trump and those who back him most vocally refuse to accept he lost the state of Wisconsin. They just keep arguing there was fraud somehow, though we've not seen any evidence of it. And that's long as you have an avenue to claim that there was some kind of something awry with absentee balloting, you run that risk of what happens in 2024, hearing the same kind of arguments post-election.
But drop boxes really weren't a partisan issue necessarily before 2020.
People really hadn't, you know, not really. You know, they hadn't really seen it. Now, there were some partisan, there were concerns Republicans raised about, like in Madison, they had paid city clerk employees in parks collecting absentee ballots. There were concerns raised if that was appropriate. But yeah, I mean, we saw a letter from, if I remember correctly, from then Senate Leader Scott Fitzgerald and then Assembly Speaker Robin Voss that talked about drop boxes. Weren't saying, hey, we want them eliminated, but was talking about the use of them. So there wasn't that same level of concern, but you know, that's a long time ago now, it seems like, right?
Yeah. I mean, it definitely seems like a long time ago. You're tuned into Capital Notes. I'm Mayan Silver, speaking with J.R. Ross, editor of WisPolitics.com. So moving on to Wisconsin's first congressional district. So for those who don't memorize where the congressional districts are, like me, that's in southeastern Wisconsin, covering Kenosha, Racine County, most of Walworth County, as well as portions of Rock and Milwaukee counties. It's currently represented by Republican Brian Steil. There were some developments in the race this week. Can you tell us about it?
Well, a big one was Democrats got Peter Barca to get in the race. Now, there were a couple of Democrats who had announced they had not raised any significant amount of money so far and hadn't really gotten any kind of attention. Barca gives Democrats a kind of more high-profile candidate. Now, the question is, can he win? And in talking to people since his announcement, there's some real split there because that district, it leans Republican ever so slightly sometimes, depending on the dynamic, right? Go back to 2022, Brian Steil won by almost 9 percentage points. Governor Evers, if I remember correctly, had a real narrow race in that district, lost it narrowly. So it shows you, like, you win statewide by 3.4 points like Evers did, you know, that seat could be close. The issue is, though, we're not seeing signs, at least for Democrats an issue, we're not seeing signs that Joe Biden's going to win Wisconsin by 3.4 percentage points. If you don't have that, how do you get enough of a enough Dem enthusiasm to win that district? Now, Barca, he can raise money. He's run for office before. Actually, he was elected to the first district back in 1993, lost it in the GOP wave of 94 that following fall. But for Democrats, even Barca can't win. He gives them a well-known candidate in a key seat that might help the top of the ticket, which actually, it's kind of an interesting theory because most of my career, I've been told that the top drives what's going on in an election. So the presidency, the governor's office, those races drive down ballot. Well, there are some people enthusiastic about voting this fall and not enthusiastic about Joe Biden. If you're a Democrat, it's better to have a Peter Barca in the first congressional district than somebody who's not well-known because you might bring a reluctant Democrat out to vote this fall. That's the theory, at least. That elected Democrat might vote for Peter Barca, then while he or she is there, cast a ballot for, Joe Biden. Now, people I talk to, some aren't real sure they believe that theory is going to pan out this fall, but it can't hurt, right? I mean, if you can get even a little bit of people, a few people out, it might help. So that's kind of part of the narrative we're hearing. That's why we're pushing to see people like Barca in the first congressional district. They have Kristen Lierley up in the 8th Congressional District. That is not a seat Democrats expect to win, but having a high-profile candidate, somebody who's known in certain circles, it might help because 2 years ago, Democrats didn't even run anybody against Mike Gallagher at all. There was no Democrat running in the 8th Congressional District. They're not going to let that happen again.
Just focusing on 1st Congressional for right now, people who don't really know much about Barca and Style, where do they fall on things? Like, what's important to know about them?
I mean, Peter Barca wants to cast himself as a kind of a moderate Democrat, that he's been conservative on, or moderate on fiscal issues, pro-business type guy. He worked in the Clinton administration on business stuff. Brian Style is part of the GOP leadership in the House right now. He's kind of the mold of Paul Ryan. He's, people I talk to, he's pretty conservative. Isn't like a, somebody who is colorful, if we want to use that word, in terms of getting in conflicts with his colleagues. He's pretty, you know, part of the team. So yeah, I mean, they're pretty reliable Democratic and Republican votes if they're voting on stuff.
And would you say that that's one of the more interesting federal races to watch in Wisconsin this year?
Yeah, I mean, it's presidency, U.S. Senate, 3rd Congressional District, 1st Congressional District. Those are the ones to watch. Obviously, the presidency is most of the attention. U.S. Senate is huge. The question is, will the 1st or 3rd or both be truly competitive come October? And we'll know that if the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee is spending money in those seats in late September, early October. I mean, 2 years ago, they laid down ads in the 3rd District, for example, to help Brad Pfaff. They pulled out in the closing weeks. And hindsight was a bad decision because Derek Van Orden won by like less than 4 points. Would that have made a difference? We don't know. But pulling out does not look like a great decision. And the point that's made to me is, in an environment like this, where there'd be so much money spent in Wisconsin on TV and radio and everything else, you have to spend early. You got to get people, when they're paying attention, just start to tune in before they get like overwhelmed by stuff. So if you're not seeing, again, late September, early October, the DCCC spending money in those two districts, they're maybe not that serious about winning them come November.
All right. Well, thanks for this background, JR. It's real helpful. And thanks for joining me on Capitol Notes.
Anytime.
That was J.R. Ross, editor of WisPolitics.com, speaking with me, WEWM's Maayan Silver. Listen for our segments every other Monday with an extended segment on Lake Effect, and check out the Capitol Notes podcast wherever you get your podcasts.